Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I am David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network. And I am joined today, once again, by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you? How are things?
I'm great.
In beautiful El Segundo.
El Segundo, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain.
Yeah, just west of Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't think that's right. Actually, I think I've shared this before, but it is very much an Oklahoma town. You know, it's built around a refinery. The refinery workers, when they came 1910 or whatever, they were all from Oklahoma.
Did you intend that when you started singing that song?
No,
not really. No,
no. It's got the right number of syllables.
And isn't El Segundo High always used in movies because it's just got some classic look or something, like Brooklyn?
Correct. And super bad. The scene on the track where they're out there, they're running the wrong way on the track, which bothers my brother to no end.
Understandably.
Yeah. But that is El Segundo High. A lot of TV shows at El Segundo High.
Yeah.
It's very scenic. It actually looks a lot like upper campus at UCLA. Quad.
North campus.
God, wow, my brain so good these days.
Yeah, here's a good story. This guy, now UCLA grad, who is a doctor, was on campus walking some kids through, I think, who went to UCLA, and they were down in South Campus, and he said, "Oh, the bomb shelter is great." And he goes, "Why do they?" And the 20 something said, "Why do they call it a bomb shelter?" So there used to be a bomb shelter here, and they're all, "Why?" Said it was during the Cold War.
What's
and these
that?
Are educated 20 something said, "What's that? Was that when the war was cold?" Okay.
Was that back in the last ice age? When was that? yeah. So anywho, in the world of UCLA athletics, there is much, as always, to discuss. We're going to talk about, I think, the hot topic on a lot of people's mind with respect to the broad expanse of college athletics, the 5 for 5, 5 years of eligibility for 5 years. So in 5 years, you can do all 5 years of your, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm going to do it again.
They need a title for it. What is the damn official title?
You just get 5 years out of high school. You get 5 years to do 5 years of playing. So no longer will you need to redshirt and do, you know, you can get 4 years for five. It's now going to be 5 for 5. Okay. What and we'll get into all the details of that, but how it might impact UCLA immediately. We will discuss. We want to talk about football. They're winding into the end of spring football. Tonight is actually a very cool practice that we'll talk about. And then next week, and then heading into the spring game next weekend. We're going to talk about football recruiting, which continues to seemingly be punching way above its weight in the energetic Bob Chesney era. And then we'll talk about some women's basketball recruiting. We'll talk about men's basketball recruiting. We'll talk about it all. Everything. The full gamut here on the Brocast.
But
before, Tracy, yeah. Before... Yes, before you chime in, before you say another word, Javert, we at Bruin Report Online right now, you can get 4 months. 4 months. Tracy, how much of a year is that? Like in a fraction? Give it to me.
Let me think. That would be one third of a year.
One third of a year. That's 33. One third of a year. You can get Bruin Report Online for $1 for that third of a year. That's crazy.
And here's a secret that no one knows, and we'll just tell you. When it goes to May 1st, it goes for 3 months for a dollar. So do it now in the next 6 days, and you will get an extra month thrown in for your dollar. So do that math. An extra month. So instead of 90 days, you're getting 120 days for a dollar. Go.
You have never been able to stretch your pennies further than you can in the next 6 days. All right. Nice. That's all we're saying. But you get access to all of our info, all of our analysis, all of our breaking news, all that good stuff. But you also get access to our premium message boards. where thousands of UCLA fans talk every day about the gamut, the full run of everything involved with UCLA and college athletics. And one of the hot topics in the last day, Tracy, has been this 5-5 proposal, which is starting to take shape, seemingly. The NCAA is in support of it. It seems like coaches are getting on board. Coaches are already being asked to comment on it. A lot of buzz yesterday that it is not only being proposed, but that it is very, 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 very likely to happen, and potentially very soon. Now, the main detail item, I think, as it pertains to everyone, is exactly what level of grandfathering will be involved, and whether that will impact UCLA next year. So there's a lot of different things that are being talked about. The most logical one to prevent lawsuits, in my opinion,
prevent lawsuits, Dave.
It is to make it immediate.
Yeah.
And make it anybody who is currently exhausting their eligibility, make them able to have another year. But that does create a whole host of other
issues. More lawsuits. Yeah.
Yes. So once again, the NCAA is
right on top of things,
attempting to find every rake to step on, and succeeding admirably. But Tracy, do you want to start in the general sphere of like what the different implications of all this is broadly, and then get into the UCLA specifics?
Yeah. And you know what? A lot of this is just still speculation, because while within our little industry here of college sports, people are talking that this is the feeling is that it's going to happen. There aren't details.
No.
Which makes it just so much fun. Like you said, they're doing this. The NCAA now is it. It is an organization that is just trying to avoid litigation. That's their life. How can we minimize being sued? So there were probably enough players who were suing to get another year. So the NCAA solution was to pass this rule called, I guess, 5-5.
Why don't we just call it the Sky Clark rule?
You get 5 years to play five. So that's different than what it's been. It's been 5 years with a redshirt to play four. So what that would do immediately, now, little caveat, you cannot have already played 5 years and had a redshirt, or like Frank Kepnang, the center at Washington, he'd be going on his eighth year. You can't do that. You would only qualify if you've played just 4 years, not no redshirt year, just 4 years. Okay. So it's five to play five. So what that does, if they just drop that into this whole environment right now and make it that people who are losing their eligibility, who have played 4 years, as of right now in 2026, for the 2025-2026 academic year, you will be granted another year of eligibility. That sounds wonderful just on the surface.
But can we go through the implications of that, Tracy?
And here are the most, let's just take football to begin with. There was that NFL draft. Well, it started yesterday. Let's say you signed a free agent contract. Free agent contracts, I mean, $300,000-$400,000 a year. I don't know, something like that. You want to sign it. And then this passes and you could make $1 million in college. I think you'd go and let's say, want to get that eligibility after you already signed your deal with the NFL. So that would be an immediate problem for football players. Women's basketball, WNBA just doesn't pay that much. You can absolutely, if you're a good women's basketball player, you could make more in college basketball. All those first round draft choices might sign their deals and then say, wow, I think I want to go back and play college basketball and make more money. It really gets crazy when you're talking, especially about men's basketball and women's, because of the recent transfer portals just closing. Dave, let's just say you're a program. You've signed some transfers. You've used some NIL. Then you've realized that at least a few of your guys who exhausted their eligibility will be eligible again. And those guys were good. You need like another conservatively 6, 7, 8 million in an, I don't know how much. And you just gave it away to transfers. If you were that program, what would you do?
Well, I don't think there's much you can do, but I think the reverse of that implication is actually the more interesting one, which is suddenly. So this gets into the other ramifications actually first, which is if a school has filled up, if a school has filled up on its NIL or filled up on its roster, but you're a four-year player who has no professional prospects, and now you can go back to whatever school and they don't have an option for you, then, well, the NCAA is going to be under pressure to create a special transfer window. If there is a special transfer window created, suddenly there will be a pool of, I mean, what do we think, Tracy? 100 players? And these will be four-year guys from college, minimum.
At least.
I'm just thinking of guys who might actually be wanted by major programs.
Okay, let's go with 100.
But yeah, you're going to add this entire pool of players that nobody was counting on, that nobody allocated budget for. I think it'll be a depressed market. Like, there will be some schools that are well positioned to take advantage, and we'll maybe get into one. But there will be some that have already allocated, 90%+ of their budget for next year. And so it's, I think it creates a situation where, we've talked a lot about the inflation of the market, but this is going to be it's going to be a massive influx of talent into that market that will, I would think, unless everyone is stupid, and we are learning everyone is indeed stupid, that should depress prices. Because
there just isn't a lot of money available.
Well, for Joe four-year player whose best option is maybe a two-way contract or more than likely going to a different country and making maybe six figures, this is, whatever it is, 500K, 600K, is going to suddenly look very good. And so it's, I don't know, I think for the well-positioned school, this presents a major potential advantage if you've got some money and some roster flexibility. And I think for the schools that have filled up, well, it's, I mean, most of them have already signed their deals with these players. And yeah, you could try to exit from them, but those players will have to agree to that. And the players, guess what? Transfer portal closed. Unless they did that thing
that's where
you
the leave thing.
Your name in while signing with a new school, which most players should do until literally they're like going to class, then they're up. They're just tied in. They're locked.
Yeah, that's the nuance here too. So let's say you are a player that exhausted their eligibility, but you did not go in the portal. That makes sense. You weren't going back to college. You, as of right now, if there isn't that special waiver where the NCAA creates that all of these newly found eligible players can go into the portal, if they don't do that, they would be bound to return to their previous school. But there were a number of players, fourth-year players, who somehow, I don't know if they were smart or just lucky, who did submit their name to the portal. So they're in the portal, so they would be able to go anywhere that they want. If you're one of those players that didn't do that, and your previous school doesn't have the NIL for you, and you could go someplace else and make $1.5 million, couple of million more, wouldn't you be, when I say pissed off, that means wouldn't you be inspired to sue? Yeah. So more, just more issues. And it goes, like I posted on the forum, there are football players, basketball players who haven't been in school training for the draft. So maybe their academic standing has eroded a little. What would happen with them? They might not be able to go back to school, or if they got into the portal, there could be some school that doesn't really care about academics at all and just say, yeah, you're in. I mean, there are so many nuances to this, and these are just the things that Dave and I are coming up with. And a lot of people we've talked to, there are going to be so many other ramifications that we might not even be able to think about. So I mean, a lot of people that we've talked to have said they can't, the NCAA can't do it now. It's just too problematic. But like whenever you do it, it's going to cause a problem. And then the other thing, Dave, we're talking semi-retro for the players who are losing their eligibility right now in 2026. Why can't the players who lost their eligibility in 2025 have this work for them? Ooh, that sounds like another suit to me.
If you're Kobe Johnson and you're sitting on a two-way contract with, what are we looking at here? The College Park Skyhawks of the NBA G League. Why wouldn't you sue? You played 4 years, and if this had been around a year before, you would make, you know, probably $3 million in college basketball. I don't know. I think it's going to open up an entirely insane can of worms if they do this. But I also like, if I mean, the proposal makes sense. It would have made sense as like a beginning option from the very beginning. And I think even the fact that it's being bandied about will make it, you know, potential fodder for lawsuits. You know, when you've got the NCAA president on record saying, yeah, I think this is a good idea. Great. Great. That's going.
I haven't really thought it out yet, but it sounds good in concept.
I think that's going to make some fun lawsuits.
The NCAA will probably go down the path of least lawsuit resistance. The problem is they might not even be able to anticipate what that is.
Yeah.
But that's why this is being, that's what's inspiring this. But
logically, what would, I think the thing that would make the most sense and would prevent the most lawsuits is do it now, make it immediate, make it immediately grandfathered in anyone who is exhausting their eligibility this year, and open up a special transfer window for like a week in June or something like that. And if you do all of those things, I think you prevent, I don't know, 80 or 90% of the lawsuits. You're going to get some because there's going to be some players who, again, like you said, exhausted their eligibility. There might even be some schools that get pissed off by this and they try to do something, but I don't know if they can actually technically sue the NCAA. Maybe they can. And then some existing players who get, you know, forced out of their current situations, or what they would have wanted to be their current situation, who might do it. But I think you would solve probably like 90% of the volume if you just open a special window in June.
I think you have, Dave, we've talked about that. They have to do this. The wave of lawsuits and they didn't do it.
It would be so cool.
But then on top of it also, so now we'll apply this a little bit to UCLA's situation. And the, like, you start thinking about the three seniors who exhausted their eligibility. That would be Tyler Bilodeau, Donovan Dent, and Sky Clark. But most immediately, too, there is Tunde Yesufo, who we have not talked about yet, Dave. We haven't been able to even say his name until right now.
He's being named now.
He is now named the player that was named later. That UCLA is recruiting, the transfer wing from Baylor. Big time transfer. I've been watching this kid since he was a sophomore in high school. And by the time he was a senior in high school, he was one of my favorite prospects in the 2025 class. In case you haven't seen, 6'4" to 6'5", let's say 6'5", really well built. You would think a body that would be stiff, and he's not. He started out like back in the day as a power forward. I couldn't project him as a wing. Then suddenly he showed up and started putting the ball on the floor, hitting threes, showing a little shake with his handle, while he also was able to back in just about any and act as a power forward, while at the same time a great defender. I wouldn't even say on the high school level, a superior defender. Baylor, he let's say he needs some more refinement to his defense, but the tools are there. I watched the guy play four games in a day and never come out, and he just seemingly doesn't get tired also. I mean, he is the guy that UCLA would want if you're talking about a small forward. He's originally from Benin, the African country, but he spent his high school years out here in California in Santa Maria, so he wants to come back. He entered the portal with a do not contact tag, which was really done, from what I've gathered, to minimize the contact from so many college coaches, which would have inundated him, and waited until the very last day. But UCLA at this point looks pretty good. The other kind of wrench, he put his name in the NBA draft, and he's trying to sort through that. So now with the 5-5, does that compel him more to stay in the NBA draft because more people might get out of the NBA draft because they could make more money in college? Like, how, I mean, we can speculate, but in his camp with his agents, what's their takeaway on how the 5-5 would impact him?
I don't think that would be a compelling argument for anybody in his circle, because the number of guys who are four-year college players who would be ahead of him in the NBA draft is, I mean, not many. You know, most of the guys who are going ahead of him in the NBA draft at this point with the mock drafts would be, you know, high level prospects, you know, cause he's projected at the end of the first round. So, you know, it's a lot of Euros and a lot of underclassmen. And then I guess a couple of, 4-year guys who played all 4 years, but, I don't think that would be impacting his decision-making too much, like moving up two slots or three slots up the draft board.
And projected in late first round, but also I've seen him not in the first round projection. So,
and the other thing is you're kind of doing a game with those 4-year guys, because those 4-year guys, like we were just saying, you're facing a market in college that's going to be different from the open transfer market, because a lot of schools have already spent their money. So if you're, you know, projected to be 20th or whatever, some spot that's definitively ahead of Koundé's projection right now, you can make almost certainly multi-million dollars in the NBA, or you can try your luck at a potential transfer window in June. I mean, that one doesn't make sense to me as much as a potential hiccup for Koundé. I think the reality for Koundé is it's all going to come down to, you know, are you done with college and would you like to start your NBA clock now, with, you know, and risk, you know, being a second rounder and, you know, all that. Or do you, you know, go back to college and make some guaranteed millions for a year and then try to work on your development and make yourself a guaranteed first rounder, in the 2027 draft. I think, you know, we can apply like adult logic here, for all of us, who aren't currently experiencing it, and say, obviously, he should return to college and make himself a guaranteed first rounder. But I mean, people have different motivations. And if somebody's done with college, they're done with college. And they just don't want to do it anymore. And that's, you know, completely defensible. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. So from UCLA standpoint, and we're not going to give too much away, but, if this comes to fruition and UCLA needs some NIL, I mean, at this point, remember they were going after John Blackwell and Matt Abel, who would have sucked up a lot of NIL. UCLA might have some. Let's just put it that way. I mean, the guys they signed, Jalen Petty, Xavier Robinson, Sergei Makura, and Filip Jovic, aren't big headliner NIL top kind of guys. So, Dave, what does UCLA do? Does it, obviously it wants Koundé, but wouldn't it want Tyler Bilodeau?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two situations where I think, you know, you would always like to take bird in hand when you have an option, but I don't think either of these birds are in hand. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of assessing, I mean, this comes down to assessing the realism of both situations. For me, right now, I would say, I would say the more realistic one, given our history of all this stuff, is the NCAA passing a new rule and suddenly weird things are happening because that's the state of play over the last 4 years, than UCLA winning an argument against the NBA draft for a player. Because that's just not been my historical experience. Usually those arguments do not go in UCLA's favor. So I would be leaning more towards, okay, well, see if you can, you know, figure out very quickly whether the Bilodeau scenario, so to speak, is a realistic one. And then, you know, I think UCLA does have, you know, I was alluding to it earlier. I didn't think UCLA does have some flexibility, right? Because we all just saw the recruitment of John Blackwell. We all just saw the recruitment of Matt Abel. Both of those required, you know, commitments, you know, what would have been a hefty commitment. So that hefty commitment is still available. I think UCLA, you know, speaking of schools that might be well-positioned if this were to happen, well-positioned. Now, that means you would maybe potentially have to make a tough choice, or maybe you wouldn't, because alluding again to players who have options, Tyler Bilodeau, I think he could play some in the NBA. He's not probably a draft pick. So if that's the case, then you're probably not competing against guaranteed, you know, multi-millions. You're competing against
a two-way contract,
or European contract. If that's the case, you know, you might not need to break the bank, and it kind of depends on, you know, what your feeling is on whether there's going to be an open transfer window. It's still,
and he's school. A power forward, Dave,
and it's still school for these guys in school. Like, are they still doing it? So there's a lot of nuance to be worked out here. And also going back to Tunde, done with college. Well, a 4-year guy can be just as done with college as a 1-year guy. Tiger Campbell was a 5-year guy who was just done with college, who left a year of eligibility on the table. Guys can be just kind of done with that stage in their life and want to move on. Anyway, that's a lot of just kind of babble at you, but I would say the reality is that UCLA will have some flexibility. More so than a lot of other schools right now, because they just missed on John Blackwell. There's some optionality available to them.
But they will have a similar problem in that just about every program is going to be facing if they have guys who exhausted their eligibility and actually want to return. You've committed money already. You've signed contracts. Let's say a typical program has 4-year guys who want to return, who were significant contributors. And you got like 12 guys on your roster already. No coach. I know fans get greedy and say, wow, look at this loaded roster of 15 guys. No coach wants that. It drives them crazy that they try to get, first off, that they've spent money on guys who are sitting on the bench. Drives them crazy. In the NIL era. Crazy. Secondly, that they just can't get playing time for those guys. It does drive, and then trying to make that happen. What teams, Dave, by the time of the tournament are playing more than 9 or 10 guys? Really almost nobody. And some get it narrowed down to 7. Coaches do not want 12 playable guys. They just don't. They want a nice little tight rotation of 9 guys. So you're thinking of adding those 4-year guys that are coming back? They would say, well, no, we can't. We're committed to the guys we signed. And I'm just not talking UCLA, but talking in general. And this could happen, Dave, because there are some programs that would run off some players that they just signed. we're thinking about more here. Maybe
they can't. There isn't an open window right now.
Right, but maybe that's what they do. When they're opening the window for the 4-year eligibility guys, they say, okay, well, we let the guys who were in the portal, who did commit somewhere, they're allowed back in. I, you know, who knows what so many programs are going to be complaining about in the ramifications of this whole thing. Yeah. So, and then when it comes to UCLA, while we're loading up on wings and guards and, of course, power forwards, that's why you think they'll get Tyler Billado. They don't have enough. There's the big hole of UCLA really, obviously, it needs a wing. And Tunde is a great fit. But it does need another post. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. And UCLA isn't going to go out and get a top-end post and a top-end backup wing behind Tunde and bring in Tyler Billado and maybe throw in Sky Clark all at the same time. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I would say with Billado, and this is just my speculation, if you're comparing him to the, like, you know, medium to low level posts out there, I think I would probably take him as your five. You know, I mean, it's not ideal. I have my major complications with it, but it did result in the best form for UCLA this past season, at the end of the season when he was playing the five.
So now, you're looking for a five who can, and you're right. Yeah, I mean, what UCLA was doing was to go along with Xavier Booker. They were looking for a five who physically would be able to match up against big physical fives. That's what they were looking for in the portal. Would you rather have, instead of doing that, and maybe he's a mid-major plus guy who can play 15 to 18 minutes and give you a little bit of a matchup against Big Ten posts, or would you rather have Tyler Billado?
Yeah. I don't know. It's a lot of fun speculation right now. And who knows? Maybe tomorrow we learn that none of this is happening, and it's same old.
And we just wasted, but we talked 30 minutes worth.
Yeah.
For something that's not happening.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's move on.
UCLA football, the football program, is in the midst of spring football. I think they just finished, was it practice 10 yesterday?
11, yeah.
12, 13, 14. Yes, practice 10 yesterday. Tonight is practice 11. It's going to be a different sort of practice. They're going to have essentially a coach's clinic concurrent with the practice, which is really interesting and not
really cool.
We've seen before. You're going to have 175 coaches on campus, and it'll be about an hour-long practice. I imagine it's going to be heavy on individual drills. That would be my guess. But our Tracy McDaniel is going to be there, covering the whole thing, because it's wide open for media, not for you, but for the media. So we will have a full and extensive practice report from that. But yeah, I mean, we're two-thirds of the way through spring football right now. We went position by position last week, so I don't necessarily want to do that again. However, I do think it's worth discussing the more broad strokes at this point, which is, are they going to be any good?
Dave, we've done this before, where we watch spring practice and we start to think a few guys are good or this unit's going to be pretty good. You'd have to say at this point, we've learned our lesson, one. And two, I'm not getting great indications just yet. I see some talent, but I don't see, like, I would have liked to have seen at least, what I would have really liked to have seen is like a really dominating defense. The defense has been better because the defense is always better in spring practice, but just dominant defense. Like we've seen in the past in spring, quarterbacks can't even get a pass off. A lot of times. I mean, generally there's been a decent pass rush this spring, but the quarterbacks have generally been able to get their throw off. So I'm skeptical, Dave, but that's just me at this point.
I don't think it depends on what you mean by skeptical. I think they're going to be pretty solid at minimum. The parts that are a little bit concerning to me, I don't think any of the quarterbacks have had a good spring, from what we've seen. Now, we are missing basically 40 minutes right in the smack middle of practice where I think a lot of team periods happen. So please take this all with a grain of salt. But from what we have seen, I don't think any of the quarterbacks have been impressive. Nico Iamaliava, I think, is taking to the new offense. He may have changed his arm angle a little bit. He's gotten a little bit bigger and thicker. All these guys can run, which is exciting for me. And UCLA is very much going to run the quarterback this year, which is, again, very exciting for me. Because I like college offense. I don't want to watch some garbage NFL offense at UCLA. I want to watch a college offense. And it looks like that will be the case. But I haven't seen great throwing. And it just seems like they're still maybe kind of in the growing stages with the offense. So I would say that is a concern of mine, just kind of quarterback. And I imagine by the time the season comes around, Nico Iamaliava is going to be good. And it's, you don't have to go too far into the history, to find us thinking a quarterback had a horrible spring. And I don't think Nico's had a horrible spring. But to find a quarterback that we thought had a horrible spring who ended up having a great season. I think every year that Josh Rosen was at UCLA, we thought he had a horrible spring. And maybe the last 2 years of Brett Hundley, we thought he had a horrible spring. So, take that all with a grain of salt. And then otherwise on offense, I don't have too many egregious concerns. I think they've got some pieces on the offensive line that make me think it's going to be improved over last year. I don't think tackle play is going to be anywhere near as bad. I think receiver is going to be good. I think running back is going to be possibly very good. And then the defense is, I think, where my major concerns lie. I don't know about defensive tackle, and I don't know about linebacker. I really don't. I think the other pieces around that, I think the edge play is going to be good. I think defensive back play is potentially very good. The middle, which is, I don't know if you know this, Tracy, the middle of the defense is an essential piece of it. Mm. That's where I've got just a lot of skepticism. I don't know about the defensive tackles really at all. It sounded like Aiden Gabara, Tyson Ford may have gotten a little dinged up. So we will see. Those are kind of my two main areas right now. And, I think quarterback will probably get figured out. But defense, that middle of the defense, I think the run defense could be a bit of a struggle.
I'm still a little bit more concerned probably than what you said about that offensive line. I'm always concerned about the offensive line. And most of the time in UCLA's recent history, it's been valid. We haven't seen great offensive lines for years. They've been doing a lot of mixing and matching. They might be settling in here a little. If you read the story that I did from practice yesterday, there's some consistency now, I think, a little bit between the ones and the twos. But I'm concerned. I'm concerned there. And I just can't go out on a limb and say linebacker play last year was not good. I just can't say right now I have confidence from what I've seen this spring that the linebackers will be solid to good. And then, like you said, the interior defensive line. So there are a lot of worries. Yesterday, it was with the center snaps, and I'm not giving away anything, Dave, because it was in the title of my story. So it wasn't good. And it looked like when we got out there the second time from the media viewing, there was a period that was just trying to settled down those center snaps. Maybe I misinterpreted that, but that's what it looked like. So that's a concern. What was interesting on the day when there were some bad snaps, that's when Sam Yoon, the starting center from last year, did return to team periods. We thought he was going to be sidelined, literally on the sideline with the recovering players for all of spring, but there he was. And he, from what I could see, snaps were clean. So that's a concern right now. Now I have to say, Sahir West, if there's a guy who just looks different, who has that NFL kind of thing written all over him, it's Sahir West. Just not only physically how he looks, but if you isolate on him and watch him, even when he's away from a play, he's doing something that shows quickness, strength. He's got an NFL type of feel to him. That's been a big takeaway for me, because he was coming from James Madison. You were hoping it would translate, and to me, his play, and to me, it has this spring. I'm still kind of concerned. Would really like to see that last week of spring practice. God, it's already the last week. That went by really, really fast. Really like to see some things tighten up. And then a really good display performance for the spring game. Nothing flashy, right? Just some solid fundamentals. And, you know, maybe a few stars, potential stars stepping up and showing off.
Okay. Okay, Tracy.
Okay, Dave.
We
have one more thing to talk about when it comes to football. And you mentioned
talk about football recruiting, Tracy.
We do, Dave.
Because UCLA continues to have a very good recruiting cycle. I don't know. It's weird. Just this past week, literally 3 days ago, Notre Dame safety commitment, Khalil Terry, decommitted from Notre Dame, and then the next day committed to UCLA. He is the safety from Tustin. UCLA was getting hot and heavy with him when Deshaun Foster was still the head coach, because Demetrius Martin had recruited him at Michigan State, which is where he was first committed before he decommitted from there last spring, then committed to Notre Dame, then decommitted from there, now is committed to UCLA. He's a four-star. He's now the second highest-rated commitment in this class. And this is on the heels of Pole Moala, the safety from Luzinger. He committed last week. And Zach Fares, the tight end from Arborview, Las Vegas, who also committed last week. That's 3 4-stars in the last 12 days who have committed to UCLA. The Bruins are probably not done, and we're not even into official visit season yet, for UCLA at least.
And as of right now, Dave, I just want to make sure it hasn't changed.
They're 22nd.
They're still 22nd. So our friend Brandon Huffman and I just eyeballing. Right now, UCLA has, if you're going by rivals, rankings, they have 4 4-stars. Industry, they have 3. But, I mean, let's go with the 4. And I'm going to write a story about this, but Brandon's going to write, we're going to have a couple of stories about this. So the way football recruiting works now, most of your class is committed by mid-July. They take all their visits in spring and they get it done by July. It's the equivalent to what it used to be signing day back in the day. For UCLA, let's just put this in perspective. Have a pretty bad program, just say, in terms of results for a while. Not good in recruiting. A lot of turmoil. This guy comes in, Bob Chesney, doing all the right things, saying all the right stuff, putting so much energy into recruiting. And like we've said, if you put a little energy into recruiting at UCLA, you should get some results. And right now he's ranked, with not playing a game, the recruiting class is ranked 22nd. It wouldn't take that much for it to finish, and I'm saying finish by late July, in the top 25. Maybe 3 or 4 more 4-stars. I mean, if they got 8 4-stars, it'd be pretty much a slam dunk if they get commitments from 22 to 25 players. They're not that far away from securing a top 25 high school recruiting class. Seriously, Dave, I mean, we cannot undersell this. This is like, if that happens, that's one of the biggest accomplishments in UCLA football or basketball in terms of performance on the field or recruiting that we've witnessed in a long time. To be able to do that, given where this program has been, I mean, it's a testament, again, to the advantages, but it's also a testament to Bob Chesney and what you can do when, you know what you're doing.
Yeah. No,
pretty damn amazing. Seriously. And Brandon and I were talking about it and just saying, no, this is not a stretch. This is
no, I think you're underselling it. I think top 15.
Given the guys that they have available and the ones that are close to getting three or four more four stars is probably a likelihood.
Yeah, that's top 20, and it's going to be close to top 15. I mean, if they get 10, that's kind of the benchmark. 10 four stars gets you a top 15 class, more or less. And they could. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. So
we'll be doing we'll be doing a couple of stories about it. We'll get in deeper, Brandon and I, about what it would take to finish with a top 25 class, and then maybe getting even more granular on the type of the guys, the four star guys. And actually, there's a lot of ranking that has to be done out there. There are a lot of guys that are only ranked by one ranking service and need their, and that's why some of their overall ratings are low. And once that's, Brandon believes, once that is finished up, some UCLA guys will, their overall rankings will move up. So yeah, we'll get a little granular in the guys in the 2027 class that could really push this over the finish line for UCLA.
Exciting times.
Then also how the transfer portal will figure in. I'll break it down probably a little bit unit by unit on what UCLA will need in terms of transfers, which is just a horribly difficult proposition to do, given that anyone could be a transfer at any given time with the transfer portal.
And we haven't seen this team play yet.
Exactly. But just trying to eyeball exactly what the needs will be and how those 2027 prospects fit in.
There you go. And then the UCLA women's basketball team program signed Addie Brown yesterday. I won't say the final piece of the puzzle, because UCLA probably is still in the market for one or maybe two more players, but who those players are at this point, I think, is still TBD. I think they're kind of beating the bushes internationally, looking for right fits and people who can obviously get into school and pass admissions. So that's, I think, going to be a continuing process. But Addie Brown, that's a huge get. She, on a pretty dysfunctional offensively Iowa State team, put up essentially more or less very close to a double-double last year, 12 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. She's a capable enough shooter, but she provides a lot of, I would say, scoring punch, because I don't think last year, given how kind of dysfunctional Iowa State was, that's a great indication of her scoring ability. But she will rebound a lot. It's a really big get. She immediately walks into a starting spot and will be one of the key figures for UCLA next year.
Let's talk a little bit about now. They might add one more, but you can start to see this roster and maybe how the rotation and the starters. I mean, like you said, Addie Brown's a starter. Sienna Betts will be a starter. I think Timia Gardner will probably also fill in at that four spot. So you've got your front line, and then Amanda Muse probably coming off the bench at post. On the perimeter, Arnasalo and Hunter are probably your starters. And then you've got a bench between Okafor, Billick, Diaz, and Karamuzi. So you've got the makings. You could go into the season with this roster and still be pretty good. I think they wouldn't mind getting another player that could play some four and some five. That's what they were going after with Trigger, who went to Washington. Kind of a shame they didn't get her, because that probably would have just filled out this roster perfectly. But that's probably what they're still pursuing to maybe add one more. I think Corey Close, given the limitations, I mean, Corey Close comes off a national championship, just a magical season, historic run. And, you know, the limitations that she was handed in recruiting this transfer class, I think she's done a miraculous job.
Yeah, I agree. And I think adding Brown was such a key linchpin. I think now you can definitively say this will probably be a top 10 team again. And with, you know, upside, I think if they add another decent player who can actually be rotational, I mean, it's a really talented and good team. I mean, they don't have Lauren Betts, and that's, you know, you don't always get a generational player every year. It's they've got a ton of talent. And, you know, a junior Arnasalo now, who's gone and gotten her seasoning at North Carolina. Donovan Hunter, who's a great defensive stopper. Addie Brown, who I think is going to be a really, really capable scorer in Corey Close's system. And then, you know, Tamia Gardner coming back. Sienna Betts, you know, I think with her just, you know, getting, you know, starting a year fully healthy and being ready to go and, you know, getting her body right, I think there's going to be a lot of really good play from UCLA this year. So
yeah,
I think it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, Addie Brown was a key. They hadn't brought her in, we would probably be saying there might be a hole, but she really filled. She'll fill a role that they really need filled.
Yeah, absolutely. We got anything else, Tracy?
No, that was action packed.
Action packed. That's what they say. All right. For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online. We will talk to you again next time.
We'll see y'all later.